AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Today's episode is sponsored by Loot Crate, the subscription box for the geek, gamer, or nerd in pretty much all of us, because let's be honest, we're all kind of nerdy. For less than $20 a month, you get 6 to 8 items of gamer, pop culture, licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, basically unique one-of-a-kind items that you cannot get anywhere else. Make sure to head to lootcrate.com/words and enter the code WORDS to save $3 on any new subscriptions. The year thus far has been pretty awesome for Loot Crate. Items from Star Wars, Voltron, just really, really fun stuff that will get your nostalgia juices flowing. This month's crate is all about covert operations. They're very secretive. They obviously don't want to let you know, but the stuff that I've seen that they've sent out before is awesome. So remember, lootcrate.com/words, enter the code WORDS to save $3 off of your new subscription. So you have until the 19th before 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time to sign up for this. lootcrate.com/words, enter the code WORDS, $3 off. Do it up. And welcome to another episode of 100 Words or Less, the podcast. I'm enunciating this in different ways because, frankly, I get bored of my own interests as well. Maybe some of you do. Maybe some of you are like, oh, wow, like you say the same exact thing over and over for every intro. And it's just, you just get into pattern. It's just hard to break that pattern because it's, it's comfortable. It's like a little security blanket. So I know how to start these things off appropriately. But anyways, that's not what you came here. You came here to listen to a hopefully inspiring, engaging, insert other adjective in here, conversation with a person who is involved in doing cool stuff within independent culture and more specifically within music. And that person this week is Adam Blake. He is the guitarist for H2O, and he also played, if I'm not mistaken, bass in Shelter. You'll be able to hear, we obviously reference that in our interview, some items out of the way in regards to things that the show wants to be engaging with you, the listener, on. The show is basically, it's locked into a pattern, and I'm really, really enjoying it, and it's really fun. Some things may be changing in the near future in regards to my time commitments towards the show. I'm hoping that won't be the case, but there may be some things where stuff will need to change, because obviously I don't do this as a full-time job. I would love for you to all of a sudden feel that you need to give me money in order to make this my full-time job, but I have no illusions about that. I understand that. But I just wanted to give you a heads up. I feel that's my responsibility. You and me having a relationship, albeit one-sided. Some of you know me, and that's obviously awesome. But there are many of you who I've never corresponded with, and I want to be in love with you. I don't want you to be all of a sudden surprised where it's like one week I'm like, oh, hey, the show's going to end. And I'm not saying that's going to happen. I don't want to sound alarmist by any capacity, but my time may be more shifting around to where, I just won't have as much of it as I used to. But anyways, I don't mean to sound so vague, but because I just want to be honest with you, because ultimately that's what this whole thing is here about. The conversations I have with people are from a very honest and hopefully inspiring place. But anyway, so there's that. There's just a lot of stuff that's up in the air right now with me in a positive way. I'm just going to have to be making some larger decisions in my life. And I'm frankly excited about that. I know a lot of people, whether it's like a new job opportunity or whether it's like, oh, I need to move, and like all these things are really stressful to people. In certain respects, I kind of thrive off it, where I'm just like, all right, if you give me the opportunity, I will be excited to do it. And so that's kind of where I'm at in so many different respects. So anyways, I will be, I promise, once some things shake out, I will be more open and more detail-oriented, because I hate it when people speak in generalities. And that's what I'm doing to you right now. So I apologize. But themed month that we just had in October was extremely successful. Thank you to everyone who downloaded and interacted with the show in ways that, maybe you hadn't listened to the show before. I pick up a lot of new listeners that are very interested in whatever themed month I'm having. So, I was excited to hopefully get some of you along for this ride, because ultimately I want you to be downloading every single episode regardless of the guest. And those are the people that I am trying to connect with. Like, I really want to be, I don't want to be a radio show in the sense of I want to be in your ears 5 days a week. I don't want that. But what I want is for you to be looking forward to when this thing comes out. When I put it out on a Wednesday or a Thursday, I want you to be like, man, I'm really looking forward to the guest. I'm really looking forward to that conversation. So, I don't know. I'm all over the place right now. I'm highly caffeinated, and that's probably why I am all over the place. But the conversation I had with Adam Blake, this was something we did a while ago. He came over to my house, and man, like, I knew I liked him on a sort of person-to-person level already, because we had hung out a few times previous to this. But after our conversation, I was like, oh, Adam, just great. He was so open, so honest about his life that I was, frankly, I was taken aback. There are moments when, I feel like some people may come in with trying to be, protective over their image or who they are as a person. But anytime a person comes in here and is just like, oh yeah, I'm an open book, and then they actually deliver on that, I'm so excited about that. So Adam came over to my home studio, or house as I like to call it, and we sat around my kitchen table and had a very great discussion. He has so many awesome experiences and so many lessons to be taught and also learn himself. We went into so many different places. But anyways, without further rambling, and I promise I will do the next intro a little less caffeinated, because I do feel a little manic right now. But without further ado, here's my discussion with Adam, and I will talk to you after the conversation is over. I just remember, because like the first time I actually met you in person was when we had that lovely lunch at Cafe Gratitude.
Cafe Gratitude.
And it was one of those things. I had been aware of what you'd done in the past, mm-hmm. as far as you being an HBO and everything. But I was you're very charming.
Thanks.
You're welcome. What I actually like to define these people, yourself included, where you're an easy hang. Where it's like, generally speaking, you could kind of like plug yourself into different groups of people, and you can generally navigate in there okay.
Yeah. It's been a life skill that I've had to develop.
Really?
Yeah.
You were not easy to hang out at one
point. Well, if you really want to get into it, when I was younger, my mother refers to me as having been painfully shy.
Oh, interesting.
And If I'm talking about a subject that is taboo for this podcast, please let me know. But I have to say,
yes.
Oh, this is terrible to say this because I'm worried the young kids are listening.
No judgments.
That for me personally, my gateway from being painfully shy to being able to be social was drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's not necessarily like the positive party line, but the truth be told, I was really withdrawn as a kid, mm-hmm. and they gave me a little boost of confidence that kind of took me out of myself. And then I didn't need him anymore to continue.
Right.
You
felt what it was
like. Yeah, I felt what it was like on the other side, and I was able to go with it. And then just throughout life, having, you know, traveled a lot, been in different bands, lived in a Hare Krishna temple.
Right.
Kind of just learn to be you wherever you are.
Right, right. Yeah. No, I appreciate you bringing that up because there's a reason that alcohol is called a social lubricant.
For me, it absolutely was.
Totally.
But in England, it's kind of compulsory. You have to drink at 13 in England or they throw you in prison.
Totally. Culturally speaking, it's so different from that. Yeah.
It's a world of difference, man.
Totally. It's just like, here, this is in your bottle, right?
Yeah. You get milk and whiskey.
Just warm you up for the world. Yeah.
When you're a baby, they're not sure if you can walk yet or if you're just too drunk to walk. They can't tell.
That's so perfect. Well, I do appreciate that because I do think that is a skill for you to be able to, like I said, sort of integrate within most situations and kind of be like, and have people walking away at like, Adam's a cool dude. He seems on the level, you know, like, because I mean, some people don't have that.
I think it's because I genuinely find a lot of people interesting.
Okay.
And I'm okay with listening. You know, I think that's big.
Yeah.
Because people will show you who they are if you give them enough time, big enough window to do.
It's a very good point.
You know, so just sitting back, listening, into helping push the conversation along without necessarily trying to
dominate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's very, I mean, those are very mature things to be able to like.
Well, I'm over 40. So.
No, it's true. But I mean, you don't look over 25.
Thanks, man. Thank you. I only wish this podcast came with photographs so people could see.
So you were born and raised in the UK.
Yes.
Where in particular?
I was born in Kingston, Surrey, and I grew up kind of within, you know, a stone's throw of that. So that's actually what's called I think it's a home county, which is like a suburb of a suburb, like it's outside London. But then London was where kind of all my shit went down. That's kind of where I would take the subway in every weekend, a couple of times a week to hang out. It's where I first went to concerts, mm-hmm. where me and all my friends would go. You know, the area I lived in was, it was not the kind of area you wanted to hang out in.
Was it a little seedy, I guess you would say?
It was sketchy, I mean, it was a place called Hounslow, was where I kind of like went into from my early teens on. That's kind of like your formative years, right? Where you're kind of becoming a person. Mm-hmm. And
criminal activity. You could have fallen into gangs.
Well, it
and
was
that
weird
sort of
because I wouldn't have fallen into gangs purely because ethnically I wouldn't have been allowed to be. It was there was a lot of, believe it or not, Indian gangs.
Okay, interesting.
Which Americans are like, huh?
Totally.
But it's like in that part of the world, in Hounslow, it was common. I mean, it kind of makes sense. You got all these people coming to England from India, and like English people love them to death, but they're not always the warmest bunch when people kind of come over. So they're getting the shit kicked out of them. They're getting all this abuse. So of course, they toughen up, right? You know what I mean?
I got to get some friends.
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, so there was some of that going on. There was a lot of just like street crime and stuff like that. Like it wasn't the kind of area I really wanted to hang out in.
Sure.
You know, I got attacked with machetes on one occasion.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Just for like simply existing and walking by?
Simply for walking down the street. A car pulled up. I had a bunch of guys jumped out, yelled at me for the color of my skin. I'm like, whoa, this is interesting. This is what it feels like, huh?
Right.
And a machete, tire iron, and I gotta say, I don't know how fast Usain Bolt is, but I'm pretty sure that I like probably matched his 100 meters time.
Wow. So just hit the road.
Fuck yeah. Right. I see a machete. This is
not hanging around.
I'm out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was so it was interesting. But like London was always like way more diverse. I loved it. It just had this energy to it. It's an international city, and that's always where I would go and hang out.
Right, right. And so what was your family structure like? Like mother and father, brothers and sisters?
Mom and Pop been together. I was at the wedding. I was mad small, but I was at the wedding.
Sure.
And I got a younger brother who in some ways has surpassed me in maturity levels in that he's has two kids, like a real kind of career. You know, right. he's almost like a role model to me in some ways now.
Right. He's an adult.
Yeah. He's a grown ass man and I'm still trying to figure it out.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. And so what were your family professions? Like, what were your mom and dad doing?
My dad was in, I guess you would call it construction. He was a rigger.
Oh, okay.
So his job was essentially moving heavy machinery, setting up those giant cranes, kind of all that kind of stuff. And he would travel a ton for work. So a lot of my upbringing, he wasn't around for. He would come, he was a big old drunk too. Really? Big old drunk. Yeah, he'd come home. Hope my dad doesn't listen to this. He would come home from like a long trip. I almost had come home from tour, it's so weird, but he would come home from like a long trip where he'd been away for like a month, say hi to my mom, say hi to us, go straight to the bar.
Okay.
Just come home like hammered.
Sure.
And my mom was the homemaker. She had jobs, but it was always like she would always make sure she had
Yeah, she had to take care of you guys.
She had to take care of us. But a lot of it was just me and my brother just running
crazy,
rampant. Yeah, my parents are wicked liberal too. Like looking back, I'm like, wow. Super liberal, actually.
Right, like no curfews, like you had no...
Like bong hits at the Christmas dinner table.
Oh, got it, good, right.
Yeah. I mean, they were like... I mean, it's weird, because I always think my parents were like straight-laced, but when I like hear other people's stories, I'm like, huh, maybe... Because you only got one set of parents, right? Like, what's your comparison?
That was your normal.
What's normal? Uh-huh. Like, for me, that was normal. Like, very kind of open freedom, open discussion, like... You know, my mom especially, my dad was almost like, he was sketchily close to wanting to be a party buddy at some points.
Okay.
You know, he's always, you know, he's my dad, but he's got a young mind too. He's like, kind of like I am.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. That's it. Yeah. That's a very interesting environment. And I mean, I do like the point that you make where it's like, especially like I'm coming at it from where it's like, I'm a father to a 4-year-old child.
Right.
And when you have a child or when you exist around children, you do understand the concept of just like, parents have no fucking clue what they're doing.
No, it's like I've heard it referred to as you have 9 months or 10 months, however long it is, where everyone's like, what do you need? What do you need? What do you need? And then you have the baby, they hand you the baby. They're like, okay, off you go.
Yeah.
Oh my word. Like you're responsible for the raising of a human being. Like it's like, and it's not like it's like at least the first one.
Yeah.
Like you've got to figure it out.
Totally. You've got, and you realize too, where it's just like you're reflecting looking at your parents where you're just like, that was my normal. Yeah. That's not in anyone else's normal. Yeah. And you're just like, and all your parents were doing is they're just like, oh, we're doing the best we can.
And if you mess up, it's big. You
that
know?
Stays with you for 30 years.
Yeah. Or beyond. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's crazy. Yeah. But I mean, like you said, to be able to observe something like that and then retroactively go back and be like, oh, so that isn't normal. Yeah. Smoking weed in front of me or whatever.
But I mean, that's also, you know, that's not a harmful way to grow up either.
No.
I mean, it certainly made straight edge feel a hell of a lot more rebellious when I discovered it.
Totally. You're like, not only am I
going to show them, I'll stop taking all drugs. I'll stop drinking. I'll get my life in order. That'll teach my parents.
Totally.
I'll teach them a lesson.
What are you doing?
Yeah. I might even go to school. How about that?
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Take that, Mom Paul.
Try that one on for size. Yeah. And so did you, you know, as you started to, like you said, become a human being and obviously go to London and start to develop an identity, what sort of kid did you find yourself being? Were you, you know, rambunctious? Were you, did you care about school? Like, where were you traveling?
I would describe myself as a constant seeker.
Okay.
You know, like I would move around from different groups of friends, and I would say I was fairly easily influenced, because I would buy any idea that someone told me for about 2 weeks.
Okay.
And then I'd be like, wait a second, this is crap.
You were a sampler.
I was kind of dabbling in a lot of different things to see what I felt fit. Uh-huh. You know what I mean?
Give me some examples of the things that you were sampling at that time.
Like, for example, I can't even remember. Like, it could even be like a dress style, like a fashion style. You know what I mean? Or a certain... You know, like, hey, that guy wears that shirt. I like that shirt. I'm going to wear it too. And I'd want to look in the mirror and be like, I look like him. Ridiculous. You know, it's like that kind of thing, you
totally,
know?
Totally, totally.
And I would say that I was also a person who kind of, looking back, I asked a lot of questions that ended up kind of, the answers I discovered turned out to be correct. For example, when I was 15, I pretty much stopped going to most classes.
Okay.
Because I started asking myself, well, if I follow this path, where does it lead? And I'd be, you know, basic math, I totally understood the need. Basic arithmetic, I understood the need for. Once we got into algebra, I was like, huh? What's this all about? Like,
right. What's
the upside to me learning this? And I was like, fuck it. I'm going to go do something else with my time. Okay. I'm going to just step outside those gates. I'll come back later for this English class that I like, or you know, the drama class that I like. I'll skip out on the ones that I thought were whack. And it turns out, like, I'm 42 years old, turning 43. Never needed algebra.
Right.
Hasn't come up. My lack of algebra skills has never become apparent. So I look back and I'm like, that's a little bit of a window into kind of my thought process. Like, I look for the why, you know, like,
right.
Why. Why am I doing this? And if I don't find an answer, there's a strong chance that I'll stop doing it fairly quickly.
Yeah. So that is interesting, because I definitely think that, I think most kids obviously feel that same experience of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, what am I going to do this? Why go to school? And like, you ask why, but then the step of action is usually never, like, you just don't think it's an option.
Yeah. Though that being said, when I have children, God help them if they try and skip out of algebra.
Totally.
God help me.
Yeah. Do as I say, not as I do.
Do as I say, not as I do. But I mean,
It's still an important point to realize.
Yeah, like I always kind of knew what I wanted to do when I discovered music. That was it, man. Burn the ships. I'm good. This is where I want to go. And
how did that kind of infiltrate you initially?
Well, it's funny. Like because
you were the older brother, you didn't have the luxury of having that.
It came from school. I was in school, and I never really was like a music person. You know what I mean? Like, I would listen, like anyone, like I was your average, I don't know, like your average civilian, I guess, in quotations. Like, I like music, it was in the background, yeah, it's cool, but I was never, like, into it. And I became friends with a bunch of, like, heavy metal dudes. They were, like, the long-haired heavy metal dudes at school, and we just kind of clicked, you know? I can't remember if I got into Dungeons & Dragons before I got into music or if it happened at the same time, but it was, like, a D&D role-playing kind of thing. One of them was like, you got to listen to this music. And he fucked up because he would play me. He would try and like, he tried to make like early Slayer like my gateway drug. This is like 80, maybe it wasn't even Slayer, I don't know, 86, 87. You know what I mean? Like around then I'm like, man, this is noise.
Yep.
And then he's like, and it's weird because you can like look at these moments and in your life, I think everyone has them where if you cast your mind back, you're right there. You know what I mean? And it's like
super vivid, right?
It's super vivid because it's such a profound moment in your journey. And he gave me Dio's Last in Line cassette, right? Copied cassette. And I put it on and I didn't make it past the first song for like an hour. I just kept rewinding it. I felt like it was like a roller coaster. Like my arm hairs are standing up right now when I tell the story because I can feel it again. Like I felt like it was like an emotional, spiritual, metaphysical roller coaster, like the way that music made me feel. And then from then on, it was over. Right. Then it was Maiden. Maiden was like, Maiden to this day. New record comes out today, by the way.
Right.
You know, and it was just, man, I was like a metalhead, you know, and I was a true believer, you know. I when I was young, I took a razor blade and carved OZZY into my arm.
Sure, as one does.
As one does, you know, Ozzy Osbourne being Satan and all that at the time. Of course. I was like, you know, so
that's true because at that time
there was no internet, so you believed it. Like you believe, like, man, this Aussie guy's crazy,
right? What he's portraying on his records is him, right?
It's such a different world, and I think it. I mean, not to sound like a Luddite, but I think it's such a shame that kids will never have that pure separation between the art and the artist. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Again.
Totally.
It's never going to happen again. There's never going to be an artist that you can't find out. You know, that picture of Glenn Danzig with cat litter.
Right.
You know, that's like the shitty picture. When I was a kid, that would have bummed me out. I would have been so bummed to see that. I'd be like, it's fucking Danzig. Totally. I don't even want to think about Danzig except he's either on stage or worshiping Satan. That's it. That's all Danzig does. Play shows, worship the devil. That's it. And, you know, it's like...
Well, yeah, because it is an interesting point because it's like obviously the premium is paid now on people sharing their lives.
For sure.
And so it's like now, but back then that didn't exist because all you had was what they put out physically.
And you would discover things through their subtle like recommendation. Like I'm sure you come from hardcore, so I'm sure you remember the days of scouring the thanks list for bands that they thanked.
Right.
Like, oh.
Buying records that have no idea what they sound like.
I remember seeing like Farside get thanked on like four or five albums, and I was like, I gotta get a Farside record. Gotta get a Farside record. Have to. They're cool. Farside's cool. Perfect. They're liked by these bands. I gotta get it. And that's how you would, that was one of the ways, you know, it was.
Right.
And it was like, you kind of felt like you're a little bit of a prospector digging for gold. You know what I mean? You couldn't be lazy. It wasn't going to just show up in your inbox. No. You had to go find it.
Right. And because of that, I think what the way that I try to describe that time too is like, it was devoid of context. Like
totally.
You were able to sample stuff in regards to like just buying records completely sight unseen.
Yeah.
And then you got burned a lot because you were just like, oh, this sucks. Yeah. Like this sucks, but I bought it, so I'm gonna get into it, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure.
But then you would have no frame of reference for like maybe you're like, okay, the band is from New York. Like that's probably all that I know about them.
For sure. Like I remember the Mike Judge solo record.
Sure.
And that's the record I grew to appreciate a lot more over the years. But when I bought it, I was stoked. I was like, oh shit, it's going down. Judge Records on. Go, getting ready. And I'm like, and literally I'm taking the record off being like, they probably put the wrong label on this record. Doesn't sound anything like it.
Right.
And with the internet, I probably at that age when I was very partisan in what I liked, I wouldn't have probably even listened to it.
Right.
I mean, it turns out to be a record that I loved over time, but it's still...
Yeah,
different, man. Like, I love that idea of, like, passing the cassette along. Like, check this new shit out.
Right.
You know what I mean? Here's a record. Here's the music. Here's maybe a picture and maybe a couple other pictures and some artwork. That's it.
I also think it's really important, too, what you were talking about in regards to you being into role-playing in Dungeons & Dragons, because it's like the metal in Dungeons & Dragons are obviously intertwined beyond anything that, that most people would even understand. Like, you know, role-playing games that exist now, they're not attached to a particular music scene.
No.
But it's like both of those were just like, I can slay dragons while listening to Dio.
Yeah, you know? And like, it makes total sense.
Totally.
It's total sense. It's like this, it was definitely like a very much of a lifestyle, you know, like, if you look at the rest of H2O, they definitely came from like kind of much more of a hardcore background. I definitely, my gateway was metal.
Yeah.
For sure.
No, that's
full on long hair. Like, I remember growing my hair, like, it's below my ears. Oh, it's on my shoulder. Oh, it's on my nipples now. You know, you get sight, like these little like milestones of how metal you were.
And then did you adopt the fashion as well?
Denim and leather, all that shit.
Totally.
All of it.
Studs. Skin tight jeans.
Oh, tight tops. Tight as fuck. All that.
I love that. But because it. To me, it's like, it's one of those things where it's like when you commit to something and you wear, like, in hindsight, what is the most ridiculous stuff possible? You're just like, dude, because I believed it. I lived it.
Yeah, I mean, and I believed it enough that essentially becoming a metalhead for me was taking a vow of celibacy. Girls were like, you're gross. You're gross. And also basically making yourself a target. Like, there was a thing a few years, like, I'm live and let live, pretty much.
Right.
But there was this thing a few years ago where people were like, hipsters were wearing like metal shirts.
Yeah.
I genuinely got mad at that because I was like, when I was young, like people would like yell at, you know, and I know that's something that metalheads and punk rock people have in common. Like you would catch abuse from a lot of people just from.
Right. The way you
looked. Yeah. The way you looked and what you were about. And you might have the best intention in the world, but you look kind of weird. People don't like that.
Not at all.
Very strange.
I mean, obviously, you came to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
When did you come to, like, how did, right. did you play in bands over there? Like,
I when I stopped going to regular school, I actually told my guidance counselor, I'm going to move to America and join a band. She was nice enough to laugh in my face, but.
When you were 15, you told her this?
Yeah, I think it was 15 or 16, yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was, weird. It's like a manifestation of a reality that I always wanted.
Right. And you're like, I'm going to put this into the world.
So I fell in love with hardcore music.
Okay.
Because metal's awesome, but you can only be so evil. You know, it starts to like get a little, you know, you start to see the pantomime of it all, you know?
The theatrics are like, oh, wow, I can never do that.
Yeah.
I can never get on stage. Yeah.
And then hardcore it has just a great energy, you know, like Gorilla Biscuit's first record, man. It's funny, like I tell this story and it seems ridiculous, but how I got into to hardcore was through a lot of the straight edge bands. And the funny thing is straight edge bands make some of the best music to get drunk to.
You know, sure,
like
it's true.
It's so like energetic and
totally.
It's a lot very positive and it's kind of sing along when it's done well. And it was, you know,
I mean, it's like dudes getting drunk in a bar.
Yeah.
It's chanting. Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
So I became very inspired by that side of things. And,
This was
late 80s, early 90s. It's probably moving into early 90s.
Cool.
90,
yeah.
Probably.
So yeah, you could see the proverbial scene that was developing
but,
in the States.
I mean, in England, it was, I don't know how it was over here because I wasn't here, but like hardcore kids were very open minded. Like through being involved with hardcore and hardcore kids, I was going to see Nick Cave shows in like Henry's Dream Tour. What's that, like 90, 91?
Sure,
when
sure.
every single night he did in London. Going to see, you know, Swerve Driver, going to see Rage Against the Machine's first show, going to see Caius's first show over there.
That's incredible.
Yeah, like, so it was weird because it was like almost the tip of the spear for alternative music. You know what I mean? Was like the hardcore scene was definitely like ahead of everyone else for that.
Right.
So you would go to see all these bands and then like 3 months later, there'd be Faith No More's first show on the Real Thing tour, you know. Sepultura's first show, like it was always hardcore kids were there. That was just kind of what people did because you went to go out to a show, preferably a show where you could throw yourself off stage, and it was
acceptable.
And then I was a huge fan of Ray Cappell, Ragnarok. Like to me, he's still one of the greatest lyricists, and you know, through music, an inspirational force for me. And through Shelter, I became really interested. Like I said, I was a seeker as a kid, and I kind of feel I've always had that with me in spirituality.
Sure.
And what I liked about his lyrics were that he never really gave a lot of answers. He just asked all the right questions.
It's very true.
Yeah. So he's always like, you know, are you just this body? And really think about it, probably not. I certainly hope not. you know, and so he kind of very gently through lyrics led you to down the path, and I discovered Krishna consciousness at the same time I decided to go to music school.
Okay.
So I went to a 1-year full-time music program, studying electric bass. So
why did you choose bass?
It's funny. Like I picked up a guitar. Like I was playing guitar the whole time. As a metalhead. As soon as my hair, grow my hair, buy a leather jacket, buy a guitar, right. Learn to play guitar. Fingers bled, all that traditional stuff. Hours, you know, staying in my room,
shredding.
Shredding's an exaggeration, man. Right. Shredding my fingers, maybe.
Okay.
And then, like, because I was a giant Iron Maiden fan, Steve Harris was always like my dude. But I'd yet to learn the real difference between bass and guitar. And I was like, huh, Steve's got 4 strings. And Dave and Adrian got 6. I got 6. I'm on 4. I'm on what he's got. So I figured out, this is bass. And then so I got a bass, and I switched to bass, and I started playing bass. Plus, it seemed like everyone was playing guitar.
Right.
You know?
You wanted a ying when everyone else was... Yeah,
exactly. Right. So everyone's playing guitar, someone's got to play bass, right? So I started playing bass, and then I went to music school. And I was in like this like grindcore band that put out some records over there, but after I was in them.
Okay.
And studied music. And that was another one of those where if I'd have followed my thought pattern that took me out of regular school, I should have probably dropped out of music school. But because it was music, I gritted my teeth and kind of bed with it. I'm like, okay, jazz class, jazz lab. I'm going to play jazz. I mean, the one thing about it, it forced me to really, it really ripped my ears wide open.
Sure.
Because they're like, you got to listen to this. You got to listen to that. And I was like, all right, I'm going to do this. So you end up opening your ears to a bunch of stuff. And I discovered some music that to this day, some of my favorites.
Right.
But it was like, man, I ain't going
to
need this.
Yeah, this is algebra to me.
Yeah, right. I'm not going to need it. It is algebra of music. I'm not going to need this, but right. I'm going to stick with it because music, you do it. And then I met at the Hare Krishna temple in London, where I go on Sunday for the free feast, a guy that was in shelter.
Okay.
A guy called Graham Land or Gayatri Das, as his initiated name was.
Okay.
And we became friends. He knows at music school, he knows a devotee. He was playing bass in shelter at the time. And he went back to America and he wanted to stop doing shelter for, you know, whatever reason. And he had a dream that I took his place.
Wow.
Right? That's what I said earlier about like manifesting reality just by your pure desire to make it so.
Uh-huh.
So Shelter is my favorite band in the world. Ray Capo is my favorite lyricist, spreading a message that I truly believe in. I'm in music school and I'm a Hare Krishna. It's like opportunity meets preparation.
Totally.
And he calls me. Listen, crazy idea. You want to fly to New York and try for Shelter? I was like, yes, of course.
Like, I'm on a plane.
And it's weird because I was wondering, what if I said no? What if I just chickened out?
Sure.
Man, what would I be doing?
I mean, it's super intimidating.
I mean, I was in music school and I was working as a janitor at a printing press. Like white, you know, cloth, face mask, earphones, because the presses are so loud and there's so much you can hear, like eye goggles. Like, this is my life.
Right.
So I said yes. It was cool because I knew every, preparation. I already knew every Shelter song.
Right.
Oh, you want to throw me a B-side? I got it, you know?
Sure, I'll step right
in. Yeah, I got it. And I flew out to Brooklyn. I remember, one of those moments, I remember the very first night getting to Brooklyn, it's terrified, hearing gunshots. This is Brooklyn. There's homeless shelter, Hare Krishna temple, methadone clinic.
Right.
That's the row, right? So you can imagine what the streets are like. And just being terrified, waking up in the morning, meeting Ray and Purcell, and just being like,
what am I doing here?
It was like, it was weird. It was like being the Wizard of Oz. I was like, this is so weird. Like, you're not real people to me. You just became human. You stepped down from Olympus.
Absolutely.
And then we went into rehearsal and our practice, or what was it? Audition. It was me, Ray, Purcell, Sammy.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet.
BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
So at the top of the show, you heard me talk about this awesome subscription service called Loot Crate. Here's more info. They send you amazing exclusive stuff for basically $20 a month. You will get 6 to 8 items of gamer, pop culture, licensed gear, apparel, toys, collectibles, basically the stuff that you would find at the best collectible comic book store. It comes right to your door. You don't even need to go out there and be like, oh man, I gotta buy this thing here. I want this thing to put on this shelf. You don't do any of that. So visit lootcrate.com/words and enter the code words to save $3 off of your subscription. And they've got, this month will be pretty rad. They have a theme for each month, and the theme this month, they're all inspired by classic movie and video games releases, as well as pulling from pop culture franchise. Previous crates have included items from franchises like Star Wars, Marvel, The Walking Dead, Legend of Zelda. So that gives you a context for what you're jumping into. And basically, every loot crate that hits your doorstep is like one of your close friends being like, hey, here's a rad gift. How about you check out this stuff that I've really been into? And it takes the guesswork out of everything. It basically will loop you into the coolest stuff, and it's just really exciting. Because, I mean, who doesn't love to receive mail once a month with exclusive collectible toys and figurines and everything else that you could possibly want? So like I said, visit lootcrate.com/words and enter the code WORDS for $3 off. You have until the 19th of this month before 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time to get this month's subscription. So do it now. Just press pause. Go to lootcrate.com/words, enter the code words, $3 off, and you will be basking in all of the pop culture, toy, memorabilia stuff you could possibly want. So thank you very much, Loot Crate, and now on with the show.
And I was like, oh, I guess I'm in Youth of Today right now.
Right.
And so people that listen to this likely know hardcore, right? So they know,
yes,
like how awesome that probably is to like hardcore fan.
Absolutely.
Like, this is great.
Yeah.
So we played all the Shelter songs, and there was a discussion of perhaps my height being an issue, because I'm not short. I'm 6'4" tall. And Raghunath and Paramananda, Ray and Purcell, are they're not the most statuesque of fellas. So,
no,
you know, so
quite short.
We decided that little crouching could work, you know, so got the gig, moved to America. We ran into the Harry Fisher's Temple.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So what records did you play on for sure?
I played on Mantra.
Which is the record.
But people like it. People like Mantra. I'm very happy. That was my first ever real recording experience.
I mean, that to me, that was the record that I enjoyed the Shelter stuff on Rev, but that was the record where it was like, I saw you guys play at the barn in UC or in Riverside with Voodoo Glow Skulls, I think.
If I was in the band, I don't know what yours was, but I switched to, I played bass on the record, but live I got, I say demoted, but it's not really demoted. I got switched to guitar.
Okay.
And then Franklin came in and played bass.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, I was whatever 16. Yeah. I didn't pay attention to anything besides.
Bag enough. Charismatic fella.
Totally. So that's mind blowing. At the time that you went to the States, like, where did that sit in your parents' head? Were they just like, oh my god, Adam?
No, it's funny. Like I say, super liberal parents. Like, all right, cool.
Like, go for it.
Don't be a Mooney. Don't get sucked into some crazy cult. And I was like, oh well, I'm gonna be a Christian temple. But they were cool that they met Shelter. The Shelter guys stayed at our house. Ragnarok apartment undercooked. My parents. It was like my parents have always been super supportive.
That's incredible.
It was. Pretty,
To step in from, like you said, the manifestation of the idea to the actual execution of it, and then to be in the middle of that, because, I mean, that record cycle, I'm sure, was insane.
It was
Roadrunner.
It was
nuts, that so much money was flowing into the independent music scene at that point.
Crazy.
Because that was like, you know, I always equate it to where it's like, whatever, that was like, you know, 96-ish or so, and that was like maybe the third wave of bands where they're like, all right, this is going to be the next Nirvana now.
Oh, yeah. Well, that when I went to H2O, that was really, you know, everyone's getting signed. Major labels just like showing up at CBS. Anyone in a band? Here's a contract, sign it. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But with Shelter, it's weird because in Krishna consciousness, they say that Krishna has an arrangement, and if you want to serve, he will find service for you.
Okay.
And as hokey as it may sound to people listening out there, whatever your spiritual beliefs is, I truly believe that because I believed in the message so much and thought it was such a good thing, that I was given the opportunity to help spread it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's weird when looking back, it's so bizarre to me. Like, living in a temple, like what the way I went afterwards, because I went real rock and roll, man.
Right.
Like
after Shelter?
Shelter.
I was about to say,
During Shelter was pretty, you know, it was pretty
tight ship.
Pretty tight ship there, yeah. They didn't want anyone running around doing anything silly, but But it was
So then after you left Shelter, because, I mean, essentially, like, after that record and that record cycle, it started to dwindle down.
Yeah, I mean, towards the end of my time at Shelter, it just started becoming really kind of frustrating to me, because I've told this story many times, and doesn't paint the other members of the band in the most favorable light.
Yeah.
So things didn't work out, let's say that, with Shelter. Yeah. And I decided that, you know, I was really miserable and I wasn't happy, and they could feel it, and it was just decided this isn't working out, you know, parting of the ways. I became friends with H2O on our previous tour.
God.
So I go back to England, and I remember, I was like, what am I going to do now? I was like, well, I've got a whole bunch more life experience.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll, I don't know what I'll do, but I wasn't going to be happy bleeding printing presses anymore. You know what I mean? And then Rusty actually calls me up. He's like, you want to join H2O? I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Up on a plane, go back. Didn't even try out. Just learn the songs, we're playing a show. Great. I was in.
Great.
That was 96. And that to me felt a lot more of a free situation.
Absolutely.
Because those guys are like, everyone in H2O is super open-minded.
Yes.
And they kind of like seeing me come out of myself, you know, because I've been the devotee for a long time.
Right.
You know?
I always admired the Hare Krishna movement, consciousness, mm-hmm. whatever you'd like to call it. But how do you, I guess, transition out, for lack of a better term? Because obviously people do that.
Yeah, it depends on your degree of involvement, you know? Uh-huh. I mean, I would say I was fired up. They call it fired up about it.
Right.
Probably for a year before joining Shelter.
Okay.
And probably for my first year being in Shelter.
Okay.
So that's a decent amount of time to be about it, you know? And then, like I say, like, I'll start to ask questions with myself, like, what's this leading? Then I just kind of just, like I say, because of stuff that happened within the band, I was kind of burnt on the whole thing. And then,
well, I mean, and to be clear too, it's like, it is one of those things where it's like, there's an all-consuming nature to a band that has a movement such as what Shelter
is. For sure.
Like, it's not just joining a band.
No, it's not. It's you represent something to, I mean, it was crazy. Like, we'd play shows and there'd be like before the show, there'd be a Hare Krishna pit of them just chanting.
Right.
You know, and...
Yeah, it's, it just, I just want to make sure that I put that in context, yeah. Because it's like that there's definitely something that's more, that, I mean, it's just obviously not present now.
Yeah, it was still the strangest experience I've had, because the spirituality and the music really met. You know, you would have Hare Krishnas and mass come to shows that had no idea about hardcore.
Right.
No idea. They were just there to chant Hare Krishna, serve food, light incense, and dance. And then you had hardcore kids who were there to, like, you know, go off, and it was this crazy, like, meeting of the worlds, you know?
Right, right.
And, yeah, I remember we played everywhere, like, especially Europe, because Europeans, they get into shit, you know what I mean? They would be nuts. It was just a strange time. I remember playing with, we played, like, went to Scandinavia, played with Refused over there. That was cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, I guess I put that on the list of cool bands I saw, like,
yeah, of course.
Well. A pretty long list of those. And,
right.
And just the energy was just, it was different, you know? And then...
Absolutely.
Different to regular shows, because you really had like that. It was an event, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And then I just kind of think that just died out for Shelter as a whole, you know?
It did,
I think,
yeah, yeah.
I mean.
Well, to be frank, it's really hard to sustain.
Yeah, absolutely it is. Absolutely it is.
So
absolutely
it's like
it
no matter what, you're going to run into a certain yeah. wall. And then when the person who is viewed as an icon to that
yeah.
particular movement,
yeah.
when they run into the... just keeping up that energy level.
Yeah.
That's when other people are just like, well, I don't know. Maybe I'm not yeah. as into it. It's yeah. like, yeah. That's
sure.
just what happens.
For sure. I mean, it was definitely a star that burnt very bright and
absolutely.
Then kind of dwindled out, you know?
Totally.
I mean, I know that Raghunath and Paramananda are both still
yeah.
devotional in their ways, you know?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, if you look at the list, people that are in Shelter, like the amount of members,
right?
You throw a rock any random place, there's a good chance you might hit one. There's a ton of us, like ex-Shelter members.
Totally.
It's
yeah, yeah.
deep double figures, man. Like
no,
the
it's
amount
true.
Of people that like have stepped on stage with that man. I just happen to have been one of the people that was lucky enough to be there at kind of the peak,
absolutely.
Peak of the wave where it was like kind of a bigger situation.
Totally. Yeah. There were a lot of eyes on you guys.
Yeah.
And so then you just felt less, attached to that
yeah,
movement.
I felt
and
less
so you
attached,
sort of...
Yeah, less attached to my bandmates as a whole. I just felt kind of like a satellite floating, you know?
Yeah,
felt like
yeah.
a fake kind of, you know?
Sure.
And H2O was a much better fit. I mean, those are my brothers.
Right.
You know I mean?
And did you,
family.
So then when you were in the UK and you flew back to join
Yeah,
H2O,
I flew back again.
And then, so then at that point you were just living in the States.
Then I just, yeah. yeah
okay.
Yeah. According to your government, to this day, I'm still an alien and of extraordinary ability.
So you have to petition every so often.
Well, I petition every 3 years. Yeah, but I'm married. I mean, now
right.
it's just a formality, but...
Right. No,
alien of extraordinary ability. I like that.
I totally love that. So was it just because you, obviously, since you didn't live in New York City, and like you said, you kind of were able to experience the, you know, the weird nature that is that city.
Yeah.
And then obviously the scene... H2O I always thought was this weird band in the sense of like obviously it came from New York City
mm-hmm.
obviously it came from a lot of the violent tendencies that happened in New York City
mm-hmm.
But H2O was never part of that, but you were tangentially always you always had people that were in like
yeah.
you said satellites and in your orbit
yeah.
So was it weird being kind of like airdropped into a situation like in 96 of just being like oh so like I was already familiar with H2O and I'm very excited to join, but then it's like there's all these like
yeah it was strange, like I remember like because there were people that because I lived in the temple and they were never like trash talked, but they were discussed in the terms reserved for like criminal masterminds. You know what I mean?
Okay.
The guys in bands, you know, that I would meet through H2O on a social level. And I was like, man, this guy's cool. I'd be terrified to meet him though. You know, I'd be like, man, I don't know if I want to meet that guy.
His reputation precedes
him by far, you know? And
right.
they tend to be like the greatest guys in the world, you know?
Right.
It was weird because, no pun intended, but I'd been quite sheltered up to that point in New York City.
Sure.
Like, my life was the Hare Krishna temple and walking around by myself. That was it.
Right.
That was it. My social life just exploded. Like, I was meeting all these people. I was hanging out. We went on tour with Murphy's Law, and they're like, yeah, this guy's ready to go. Let's get him drunk. And that was the breaking of the edge.
Okay.
If you're going to break edge with Jimmy Gestapo. I almost feel like you get a pass for that, you know?
It's true. There definitely,
yeah.
there are a few people
yeah.
who are just like, that's
yeah.
okay to break
yeah,
edge.
Yeah, yeah. If you're going to break edge with Jimmy. Jimmy's an okay gateway for you. And Todd Youth was a big part of it, too. And
sure.
We went out in New Orleans. They got me drunk, took me to my first strip club.
Perfect. You're doing that all in one.
Yeah, yeah. They were just like, you're going to go, let's just go all the way. And then you know, I went down that rabbit hole for many years. And not the positive party line,
no.
but I had a fucking blast.
Really? Yeah. It never got. I mean, you felt it never got dark. You were.
Oh, it got real dark.
Okay.
Real dark.
All right. Just
at the end. There were like.
There's peaks and valleys.
Yeah, the valleys. There were moments of, man, it got real shitty. Real shitty.
Right.
Quite a few times, but at the end, it got so shitty. I'm actually looking at 5 years no drinking in 3 days from 2 days from now.
Oh,
2 days
congratulations! From
5 years.
That.
Yeah. But a lot of the time, especially the beginning, like the first like 3 or 4 years, man, it literally like was celebratory every night. Like,
sure.
Yes, life is fucking awesome. I love it. You know, I'm in a van, I'm touring. I don't have this kind of giant weight of a spiritual movement that I'm kind of moving right. with. You know what I mean? I'm right. like, oh, it's on. I'm throwing down. And it was.
Yeah.
And H2O guys were, you know, like I say, they were like brothers from day one. It's like everyone supports everyone else. Everyone lets everyone be whoever they want to be.
Well, yeah, it's definitely, yeah, like, especially, like you said, coming from the context you were coming from, of just being like, well, I am this person, and this is what I'm doing.
It's weird, too, because I knew about Toby before I joined H2O.
Okay.
And I was like, I was expecting, like a gangster dude. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, who he was friends with and stuff I'd heard and all this stuff. And then, like, I meet him, and I'm like, what?
Yeah, you're not this.
No, this is, like, the best dude ever. You know what I mean? And it was like... So it's weird how as you get closer to things, the perspective could shift a lot. You know, like meeting people like, you know, Freddie and Hoyer.
Oh,
I was
sure.
always like, man. And I saw Madball's first show in London. I was like,
this is the real deal.
I was like, this is the real shit right here. You know what I mean? I was like meeting Roger. I was expecting these people to be like 5 seconds away from like taking a box cutter to my throat if I even looked at them funny.
Mm-hmm. You
know? And they're just like gentlemen.
Totally.
Warm, funny.
Right.
Interesting and interested, and it was like, man, this is
right.
This awesome.
Is, right, right. This is not the portrait of the hardened criminal that gets painted, you know, out of narrative in the game of telephone.
Yeah, it's not like the backstage, you know, hanging out behind CBGBs is like G-Wing at Rikers. It's not, or whatever it is. It's just like nice people, jokes, laughter.
Right.
You know, so pretty cool to
be airdropped into that and like you said, come closer to that.
And it was also a good time for that too, because everyone still lived in New York. So it was, you would go out and everyone would be out.
Right.
You know, now it's like we go to New York, it's like this guy lives here, this guy lives there. No one's really in New York anymore.
Different right.
city.
Right. And so then as you were obviously as H2, I mean, I'm not gonna document H2O's career in regards to the records and everything. When would you say that H2O kind of shifted? Because, I mean, even though you guys are very active still and play all the shows that you can, there was a strategic point where you guys were like, all right, we're not a 300 days touring band, you know?
A couple of things happened. Right. Obviously, Toby becoming a father.
Yep.
He still wants to, we'll still tour like a tour now for sure. Tour them, but I definitely think that was, priorities are going to shift. You
Absolutely.
Know what I mean? Because, and it wasn't just Toby becoming a father. It was also that Moon could no longer come on tour with us.
Right.
That was a big thing for Toby. Like, he didn't want to be away from Moon that much. So he kind of...
The restructuring started to happen.
Yeah, right. And then I do have to say that, like, Go was kind of like a letting out of air from the balloon, so to speak. Like, a little bit of a deep... You know, because
of course.
You kind of got this upward trajectory. You know what I mean? First record, people love it. Thicker Than Water, we moved to Epitaph Records. People like it. FDTW comes out. People are stoked. Things are good. And it's like, oh man, you know, like
things are clicking.
Yeah, yeah, things are moving. That's you know, and then we get asked to sign to a major label, and it was never really like an idea of like we're gonna sign to a major label, and we're gonna become fucking massive.
Right, right.
I think we were all seasoned enough to know that that wasn't the case, but it was also like, well, everyone else is doing it. You know what I mean? Like,
why not us take
everyone else? Why don't we do it? Like, we've never done it. Let's get on a major label and see what it's like. Let's ride this train.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because we've been on Epitaph for 2 records, so that's what, like 5-6 years, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you kind of knew what was going to happen.
Absolutely.
So we signed to the major, and we do the Go record, and a whole bunch of weird, like, stuff going on, you know. Some people wanted to make a hardcore record. You know, some people wanted to basically make Minor Threat records. Some people wanted to make, like, more, like, a little bit more, like, esoteric. I don't want to say arty. Arty is such a terrible word, but
yeah, I understand. You wanted to maybe stretch yourselves further.
Yeah, and some people were talking like, "Hey, what's on the radio? What's on the radio?" You
sure.
know? I remember a discussion about 7-string guitars, and I was like, "This is fucking just weird." Like,
wow, yeah,
like because
yeah.
Papa Roach and Korn, maybe H2O should use 7-string guitars. I was like, "This is fucked up."
Right.
No fucking way. It took me enough time to figure out 4 strings. Do not fucking give me another string to worry about.
Totally.
Don't do it.
Right.
And And I feel like, you know, you got this kind of thing, like, what's going to happen? It's like, that's it. And with major labels, I didn't fuck around. They're like, oh, you didn't sell 100,000 copies first week? Next. Yeah. You know, you're like, wait.
Right, but we're still a band.
Yeah, and then we kind of had some stuff with them, and then it just kind of slowed. Like, what are we, you know, once again, what's the point?
Then you started to ask the questions.
Yeah, like, is the point? I mean, we're still having fun, but it's like, shows were bigger than ever for Go, which is...
Right.
But it just never really kind of...
Right, materialized.
Yeah, it just didn't feel right, you know?
Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Did you at that point, because I actually asked Toby the same question, where it was like, obviously once the notion of slowing down a band starts to kind of enter your frame of mind, was it difficult for you to kind of, I guess, transition into some sort of quote unquote real life?
Like,
or did you find yourself being like, well, I can just figure out the next thing?
I mean, yeah, it was tricky. It was tricky for sure. Because there is, I mean, in my experience, the greatest lifestyle you can have is a lifestyle where you go on tour, play a ton of music, come home, do it. Mm-hmm. You know, and especially once again, it was a time like in New York City where you would go out on any night of the week and there'd be all these guys that you knew, and you go to this place, there'd be all these guys, you know, it felt like it was your city. You know what I mean? Like,
totally.
It was beautiful.
Uh-huh.
But, for me, it was all right. I mean, cause I was always just me, you know, it didn't really matter. You put me in a band and van, put me behind a bar. I'm like, same dude.
Right. Because I know it's like the reason I asked that, because I know so many people, and I'll speak from my own personal experience too, where it's like you attach your identity with your band. You know, you are, you're Adam H. 12.
Yeah.
Like, and then when you are not, when you can't really, you can still reference yourself that, even though if your band doesn't exist. But then like just that notion of like, oh, the people that I was friends with that might not treat me the same, like, you know, like, did you experience any of that? Or people?
No, I mean, for me, I was almost... At that point, like I say, we were all kind of a little not as into it anymore. So I think we all mentally had kind of moved on from being like satellites of the H2O band. You know what I mean? We all like, well, I'm me and I'm me. And Toby went and worked a regular job.
Right.
Rusty focused on his jewelry. I got into the night, you know, bar business in New York and ended up managing a bar out there. And
got it. Yeah. So you felt like that, you're like, yeah, well, I can take the next step and not feel like I'm crippled.
And
by
then
it.
we just still kept playing, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was fun, but it was really when it came time to like make a new record, you know, make Nothing to Prove, that things got like got exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got pumped.
Totally. Well, and that, I mean that I feel like it's so important for bands like you guys to do what you do, because not only are you adults with an interesting perspective playing to essentially kids that are 20 years younger than you, and it just gives hope that it's like, because I think a lot of people, especially it's like when you start to enter hardcore or punk or whatever, you feel like there's an all or nothing approach where it's just like, I need to be in a band touring 365 days of the year or nothing. And then it's like bands can show now where it's just like, well, you don't have to do that, but you can still be in people's faces, like,
for sure,
like there's that balance you have to strike.
Sure. I mean, the scariest thing for a musician is I think, for me anyway, is to have a tour coming up that I'm not excited about. And you're like, man, I fucking got to go to the office. Right. Oof, that's shitty. That's kind of where we were at the end, you know, like,
right,
we got to do this shit again.
Right.
That's shitty. Because then you're cheating the audience and you're taking this thing that that is meant to be precious and pure.
Absolutely.
And beautiful. You're kind of just shitting on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, eh. Like, it shouldn't be this. You should be like, fuck yeah, we get to go on tour. This is awesome, you know?
Right, right.
And we kind of had to wait for that to come back.
Yeah.
It took a little while.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point, though. That's a very good way to look at that, because they're definitely, it's real easy to do. When you do something in repetition, it's real easy to fall in that mindset of like, oh, I got to do this thing now. And it's just like, where most people would kill to do something like that.
Like, I read an interview with Tom Araya from Slayer recently.
Sure.
And he was saying it was kind of sad. He's like, yeah, just doing it.
Right.
And
totally.
Gotta keep, you know, keep on the road, keep making that money. And you're just like,
I know.
Damn, son. And you're in Slayer.
I know.
You're fucking massive.
It's hard.
And have been massive since the 80s.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's sad in a way because there's definitely that notion where it's like, when a person hits, I mean, especially once you hit a certain age, where it's just like, what's Tom Araya going to do?
Yeah.
Is he going to go like work at Starbucks? Like, no. Like, there's no other path in his life now, but so it's that weird, like, you feel almost trapped by your band.
Yeah. In a way, and I would happily take an enthusiastic mindset over a 5-star hotel room and a private jet. You know what I mean? Because you live in your head, man. You don't live in a hotel room. You don't live in a bus. Just inside your own mind. So if your mind is into it, tour will be awesome. Your mind is not into it, none of the external shit matters.
Right.
You're going to be fucking bummed.
Dude, well, I mean, I think that perspective is solely attached to not only obviously like the seeking like you're talking about, but then, I mean, honestly, the Hare Krishna lifestyle as well, where it's just like the attachment to physical objects.
Yeah.
And
but
that's not meaningful. It's fleeting.
No, it's definitely something that I think modern society de-emphasizes. You gotta have the good shit. You gotta have this. You gotta have that. You gotta be surrounded by all this stuff. But who's surrounded?
Right.
Who's the person that's surrounded?
Right.
That's more important
than
the shit that's around them.
Totally. And it's not even so much from like a cliched, because I feel, I mean, obviously the term PMA is thrown around. Like, I mean, it's meaningless now because
it's become a term that so many people use. It's lost its original.
Totally. It's meaningless. But it's like not even so much. It's like mind frame in which you approach things, that is, like you said, ultimately the most important way you're approaching life.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's absolutely my outlook on life. And I think not to try and beat anyone else, but I think it's a great kind of perspective to come from, because if you are not happy yourself, nothing else, there's no external force that will bring happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Buy with money.
Right.
Money will not, I mean, cheesy, money will not buy you. If you're happy, money will buy you cool shit that'll make you feel fucking awesome.
Right.
But if you're miserable, money will not get you out of that hole. In fact, money will only dig you deeper, because you'll keep buying stuff and it will make you even more miserable when that thing you thought would make you happier doesn't, and then you feel even more despair.
Totally, and then you're weighed down.
Yeah, like that Ferrari, fuck, I still feel shitty. Now I'm even shittier because I got a fucking Ferrari, I'm not even happy. You know.
Totally, what can I do?
Yeah.
The last thing I want to hit on was the fact that you, personal training, like that's been something that's been a part of your life for a while.
Yeah.
So and that, how did you get into that? Cause I think there's a really interesting correlation with a lot of people that do, you know, whatever, all the philosophies that are attached to punk and hardcore, straight edge, vegetarianism, veganism, whatever. It's like the self-improvement.
Right.
And I do, I notice a lot of people follow that path.
Right.
So like, how did you get introduced?
Well, okay. So I'll take a quick aside.
That's fine.
Because when I was really drinking a lot, I was like, I got to do something on tour or I'm managing a bar.
You're so, surrounded by alcohol.
So literally I'm on tour. I get off tour. I go back. There's, oh, hey, let's get hammered.
Right.
You know, when you're the guy in everyone's drinking story. Hey, I was out with Adam. We got smashed. I was out with Adam. We got smashed. Me and Adam went out. We got drunk. This happened. I'm like, I'm in everyone's story. I'm the guy. I'm the only guy that's in everyone's drunk story.
Right.
I'm the guy in everyone's story. So I'm like, all right, I got to stop. So I went to acting school in New York. I did a summer intensive and I ended up, they ended up asking me to do the 2-year full-time program.
Oh, wow.
So that was what I was doing for 2 years in New York. The last 2 years I was there. And I was like, and I was actually a pretty prestigious academy. It was grueling as fuck.
Like, I was going to say.
Yeah, it's that, fucking hard.
Right.
It's hard as shit. Like, they don't fuck around. They're like, you suck. Totally. You suck today.
Right.
Yeah, that was your job. Yeah, that was shitty. That was just shitty work today, Adam. And it's like, but when you get a compliment, it means the fucking world.
Of course. Were you doing plays, musicals? What sort of discipline?
And I was saying, man,
I leave that to just, the other guy. I don't assume these things.
It was plays, man. It was a legit place. It was called Esper Studios. Like, Kathy Bates came out of there.
Okay.
Jeff Goldblum came out of there. Sam Rockwell came out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Eckhart, like a bunch of like legit dudes. Like, it's a real. It's considered like one of the. And I got into it because the guy that owned the admissions guy was going to be like, "Fuck this guy, we ain't going to use him." And he's like, "Here's Unibank with H2O." He goes, Todd Morse? I was like, yeah. He goes, Todd Morse, my first friend in New York. I was like, no shit. He goes, you're in. I'm like, fuck yeah. Because it was like there was an audition process.
Absolutely.
That I epically felt. It was another one of those like weird situations. And I remember having a discussion at the end with when I dropped out a semester before graduation because I don't fucking want to do this.
Sure.
I'd ask that question again, like, what's the path? And I'm like, well, running around to 7 auditions a day while fucking bussing tables? Because there's some acting is hard and there's some talented fucking people. There's like to be a good actor. Even like the people, anyone you see on TV is a fucking savage.
Oh, absolutely.
You can't suck.
Yeah, you don't trip into it.
To have a career in it. You might stumble into something for a minute, but to have a career in acting, you've got to be fucking.
Right, really good.
You got to be good. you can't stink. And I was like, eh, I don't know if I want to swim in that shark tank.
Sure.
So I remember having a discussion with the head of the director of the studio, William Esper, like wanted to talk to me. I was in his class, right? I got put in his class. He's like, why are you dropping out? Eh, it's just not into it. What do you want to do with your life? Eh, yeah, so I moved to California. That was my thing, to get away from alcohol. But it was like, I just stopped drinking. I stay in New York.
I got to disconnect.
I got to get out of here. I got to move to California. He goes, what are you going to do with your life? Move to California. I don't know, just hang out. What are you going to do with your life? Kept beating me. Fucking wouldn't let up. I felt like a fighter in the corner and this guy's fucking wailing on me. What are you going to do with your life? And he just beat me down. I was like, I just fucking want to make music that makes people dance and smile. And he goes, that's it. That's what you're going to do.
Right.
And I was like, oh, shit. And then I went to California. And at the time, I was renting out apartments in New York. So back to the personal, how I got to the personal training thing. I was renting out apartments in New York. Above the bar I managed, there was a bunch of apartments. And if you know the bar business or you live above a bar, you know that those apartments are like not easy to get occupied. So we were renting them out to tourists. Come to New York for a week. Is an apartment in a cool neighborhood above a bar, which for a week is cool.
Yeah. You're like, I can deal with that noise.
Yeah. Sure. And we were making, you know, I was getting a piece of that business and we kind of did that. That business started to get shitty because New York City is like, huh, all these people are doing that. Let's shut that down. Because New York City likes to stop people.
Of course, making money.
Making money that they don't get a big chunk of. And I was like, well, I've always worked out. And actually, I was training people in New York. I studied martial arts for most of my life. So I was doing... I ended up getting a bunch of people that I would train individually.
Oh, right.
The schools I would train at, the academies I would train at, in Muay Thai. And then, or Filipino martial arts. And then I was like, well, people would just want to lose weight. So I would start doing weight loss stuff. And it felt good. You know, you're helping people improve themselves. Yeah. And then when I moved to California in the business, I was like, I got to really do something. And this is something that I feel like I love. And I feel like it will help me and it will help me help other people. So it's
totally.
Yeah. Tick the 2 boxes. And then I went in and studied, got my first cert, second cert, you know, just got certed out the ass until it starts looping around on itself. You know what I mean? You're like, I don't need to study anymore. And then doors just opened, like they do when you preparation, you know, an opportunity meet, and I started working, and now it's like, now I got a good amount of shit going on, you know, and it's something that I'm very passionate about in regard to how I train other people and how I train myself.
Sure.
I gives me a lot of insight into what we are as humans and the direction we're going, how damaging it is, and how modern life is really fucking us up.
Sure.
And how we really, you know, really need, you need to make a concerted effort to fight that trend.
Absolutely.
As an individual and as a trainer, I have to help people fight that trend as well. And I find it somehow correlates to the, it marries well with the music in my mind, like they're neck and neck. You know?
Yeah, no, I see exactly what you're, I mean, I really appreciate you kind of putting that framing on it, because I do think that there is something that you do hit a wall where it's like certain people, no matter what they're involved in, hit a wall where it's just like, oh, like, why am I tired all the time? Like, why am I, like you said, modern life wears people down. And if they don't do something to engage themselves, like on that sort of physical gut level, it you just waste away into nothing.
We're weaklings. We're becoming weaklings. And sure. I mean that, not, I mean, I call it fit shaming. It's fat shaming. I call it fit shaming. I'm not trying to fit shame the world, but it's like most of you are weak as fuck.
Right.
And that's not, it's not about flexing your biceps on the beach and impressing chicks. Though there's no, hey, no harm in that. Fuck it.
Go for it.
You're single, fucking
right. Go
bang, bang on them curls, buddy.
Totally.
But it's about like, there's a famous French trainer called, it's either Georges Herbert or George Herbert, however they fucking pronounce it in French.
Sure, yeah.
And he had a quote that said, be strong to be useful, be fit to be useful. So you almost have a duty to your fellow man to maintain a certain level of physical conditioning. Like if there was an earthquake and this house started to collapse and a piece of rock hit you on the head, I had better fucking be strong enough to pick you up and take you outside this building, or I am of little use.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If I'm in a house that's on fire, I had best be strong enough to pick up a child and climb down the building.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And on just like a smaller community level, if my neighbor needs help carrying a new, you know, couch into the house, I'd certainly hope that I would be maintain a level of physical condition where I'm strong enough to help someone else.
Totally.
And it seems like society really de-emphasizes that, especially because we're in such a cerebral state at this point where it's all about like, I mean, thank God for CrossFit, good and bad. You know, they got people talking about exercise on a much bigger scale, but we're in like this mindset where it's almost like, I got my iPhone. I'm going to sit on the phone. I'm going to sit on my iPad and watch a movie. And then I'm going to get up and I'm going to sit in my car and drive to my desk. Or I'm going to sit at my desk and I'm going to get in my car. And maybe I'm going to work out a nap. Maybe if I'm an animal, I'm going to work out an hour a day, 5 days a week.
Right.
Newsflash, ain't anywhere near enough. And it's not about moving around. It's about 15 minutes here in the morning. Just fucking stretch. Go for a run. Do something with your body. Your body's a physical machine. Take it for a drive.
Totally.
You know, 4 or 5 times a day, do stuff. You don't have to go in the gym and get average, but it's like,
we
need to fight what's happening to us.
Yeah. Well, and I also like how you're, like you said, there's a connection between the music and a DIY mentality. Like that's completely intertwined with,
absolutely,
like you said, you are literally fighting against the impulses that society is putting in front of you.
Yeah.
And that's the same exact notion as why we all get into like punk and hardcore.
For sure.
We're pushing against society, being like, all that stuff, not that interested in that.
I mean, you hit it on the head when you said that punk and hardcore has a big self-development, self-improvement kind of thread running through it. That's very true. And that's one of the things that attracted me to it the most. That's kind of why I got out of metal, fell in love with hardcore, was because you could kind of feel that. And when it's done right, when hardcore is done right and the music has that right energy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, like, I don't like heavy metal influence hardcore. I mean, I love metal.
Sure.
And I wrote a lot of the new H2O record, and trust me, there's a little metal in there. There's some metal shit on it. But not like Slayer metal, you know what I mean? Like the stuff I grew up on.
Sure.
And with that positive message, where it's almost like, I would imagine like a devout, you know, Christian feels when they get to go to church, like it's inspirational music.
Sure.
It really is inspirational music, and it lifts you up and it inspires you and makes you want to be better. And it exposes you to a lot of ideas, you know, like vegetarianism,
totally,
veganism,
right,
sobriety,
yep,
community change, starting on an individual level. Like, totally, these are these are things that punk, that some of them are mainstream now, but punk and hardcore was there first.
Oh, 100%.
Was there first.
Well, it's like I always look at where it's just like a lot of people, especially in like the sort of like tech community, like Silicon Valley, like a lot of them, you know, entrepreneur, like, you know, built it themselves, DIY, like that word gets thrown around because obviously it's been co-opted. Yeah. I mean, it's a television network, DIY network. But the connotation of people in Silicon Valley and in the tech world using that same correlation, I'm like, well, yeah, you are building something yourself. But you're building something so you can sell it for a gajillion dollars.
Right.
Whereas, like, the notion, especially in punk and hardcore, you're building something, maybe someone's going to show up. You don't care. You're just doing it yourself.
For sure. But even that, I mean, even that shows the like, they got that whole biohacking thing now. Like, I'm curious. I follow that stuff. That stuff's interesting to me.
Yeah.
But it shows that there's a deep kind of people looking at themselves and seeing inadequacies and holes in them. You know what I mean? And that's kind of what I was saying. Like, if you're not content and happy with you, all the other shit doesn't matter.
Totally.
And so I see that that's kind of slowly spreading from different. You could see that in a lot of different places where people are like, man, like, I want to be better. Totally. I just want to be better.
Right.
I want to be a better person. I want to be.
I want to
be the
out.
Best me. And and that's definitely comes from. That's definitely something that was been hardcore and punk for.
Oh, absolutely. No.
You know?
And it's just I always reflect on. My experience, and I know your experience too, where it's just like, I just feel so lucky that I tripped across that.
Yeah. I mean, I do. Fuck. I can't imagine. I mean, I do like this weird, like, I do like a door number one, door number two thing all the time. Like, I'm always like, what if it didn't happen?
You did it earlier in the interview.
It literally happens. Like, that one, the what if I didn't stop drinking? I do that every day.
Yeah.
Where would I be right now if I didn't stop drinking? Well, right. Where would that train of be right now, and I see it, and it's fucking grim.
Right,
and
you're like, and I'm so glad grim. I didn't take
and then,
that.
And then, honestly, when I really think about what I would have done if I hadn't discovered punk and hardcore, it's that train, that same train, is just a hell of a lot further down the track.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure,
I'm probably off the rails.
Right.
Yeah, probably been derailed as a young.
Yeah.
But it's crazy, man. Like it impacts people's lives in such a dramatic way, and it's weird how as it grows, you find people in all kinds of walks of life that, you know, were in it and out of it, and it never left them. Like Moby. Like,
totally.
Moby's a friend of mine. Moby fucking loves hardcore.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
It's never left him.
Yeah, it's like.
But your average person would look at him and be like, oh, I don't have it. But it's like, oh, yeah. Like he.
And the minute, like, two people that are from it meet.
Oh, dude.
You can chat.
It's a short.
You got something.
It's like less than a minute. You'll be like, we're on the same level. Yeah. We're on the same page.
I remember we did a tour with One Day as a Lion, which was Zach De La Rocha's band. We were like, it was a festival tour, you know. Yeah. And Toby and Zach just started chopping it up, like, oh, cigarette oil, Griller biscuits.
Totally.
You did today, you know, and it's just like, that's it. Like, there's your common ground, and that common ground will lead you to so many other places.
Totally.
Because those bands are all about more than just music.
Mm-hmm.
So when you speak about those bands, you automatically can assume that you have similar. Right. You might not have the same lifestyle, but you've been exposed to the same ideas. So you're the kindred spirits in one way or another.
No, totally. I couldn't say that any better.
Yeah.
Adam, this has been awesome.
Thank you.
Really, really enjoy this.
Thanks, man.
We chopped it up in ways I wasn't expecting to go down.
Thanks.
So.
I hope you liked it. That's fun. It's my first time doing one of these, actually. You popped my podcast cherry.
So that was Adam. I honestly didn't even know that he played in Shelter during the time when I was obsessed with the band. Like, Shelter's Mantra was such a huge record for me. So I kind of had to do a recalibration in the middle of the interview to be like, oh gosh, I'm talking to a person who played bass on one of my probably top 20 records of all time. Holy moly. So anyways, that was funny. But thank you very much, Adam. And thank you to my good friend Stephanie, who is his publicist and his band's publicist, for hooking this up. I appreciate that. I doubt she's actually listening to this part, but still, hopefully she feels the love that is being emanated to her. So anyways, the producer, as always, standing by my side digitally forevermore, Tom Richfield, our producer and editor. He does such a great job, and I can't thank him enough for all of the things that he does for the show. Visit the show, 100wordspodcast.com. We have a website, obviously, and you will be able to get more information and see cool stuff. And email the show, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. Phew. All right, I promise I will be a little less manic on the next show. And hopefully we'll be able to reveal some more information on, exciting moves in my life. Until next week, be safe, everybody.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.